Blog Talk Radio.
This is Julia Whittup with Talk Story Radio, and we have with us this morning Laura Bickle, who is going to be talking to us about using archetypal images to create a cohesive story, and we might get her to do a little reading from one of her books, too. So good morning, Laura.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to your reading. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit about using archetypal images?
Well, that's one of the things that I really love to do with my writing. And the way that I go about that is a little random. I use tarot cards. Whenever I'm developing a character for a story, I get out my deck of tarot cards and pick some cards at random. Sometimes I pick them on purpose, but sometimes I usually go with a random selection. So if I'm developing a character, for instance, like Petra, who is the heroine of Dark Alchemy and Mercury Retrograde, I picked the Queen of Pentacles. And that archetype is a very grounded, stable woman who knows where she is in the world. And then I would pick a few more cards to represent maybe some of her strengths and some of her weaknesses, because every character has them, and we do have to develop them in a novel because they really inform the story and help drive the events in character development. So I often do that. I do that with the major characters. If I'm ever stuck at a point in the story and I'm not sure where to proceed forward, I go ahead and grab a few more cards and take a look at them at random and think, maybe I could do something with that. Or if I get, for instance, the Ace of Wands, maybe something great needs to happen in this chapter. Or if I get the Hermit, maybe the character needs to appear who is a keeper of ancient wisdom, kind of the wizard archetype. And I have a character who is something like that in the story. Petra has picked up a spirit guide of sorts. He is a coyote who turned up at the trailer that she was renting on the outskirts of a tiny town. The town is called Temperance, and it has barely clung on since the Gold Rush days. And Temperance was founded by an alchemist who, instead of mining gold, had conjured it and had kind of kept the economy of this town afloat for many years until he died an untimely death. And all around Temperance, which is located near Yellowstone National Park in my fictional geography, the alchemist has left all kinds of unfinished experiments and you know, some monsters, some creatures, some archetypes or artifacts, things that Petra discovers as she is the new stranger in town. She's a geologist, and she is kind of running from her own past. So she's rented this trailer outside of town, and her first night there, she hears something in the darkness. So she grabs her flashlight, and she goes and takes a look, and she gets out of her Airstream trailer at midnight and goes creeping around to see what's happening. And she discovers this coyote who is very determinedly digging in the dirt. And she's thinking, what is going on with this? And the coyote has dug up a compass. And the compass has, she discovers later, was one of these alchemical experiments, and it has the ability to detect magic, and it runs on blood, totally ordinary blood. Petra is not the chosen one by any stretch of the imagination. She is a very ordinary woman, a very intelligent woman who is prone to doing some MacGyverisms to get herself out of trouble. But she winds up picking up this coyote as a spirit guide, which in the deck that I was using is variously represented by either the Hermit or by the Knight of Wands, who is kind of a guy who runs headstrong, you know, wherever the wind blows him. So the coyote begins to hang around her trailer, and she feeds him lunch meat, and he helps her get in and out of trouble, and he is really representing unconditional love in her world, which is something that she kind of needs right now because she's dealing with a lot of stuff. She's dealing with, she runs across a group of undead cowboys who are called the Hanged Men, who are one of Lascaris's. Yes?
Undead.
Are you still there?
I said, ew. Yes, I'm still there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Just saying, ew.
Yeah, they're some undead cowboys, and they were one of Lascaris's experiments, because as an alchemist, the guy who founded the town, Lascaris, had wanted to do two things. He wanted to conjure gold. He got that part down pat. But what he was really after was wanting to develop the secret for eternal life. So there's this group of ranch hands that were hung from the alchemical tree, the Lunaria, which, of course, exists a lot in an archetypical sense. It is the embodiment of the as above, as below principle. You know, its branches uh-huh. reach toward heaven, and its roots reach deep into the earth. And this magical tree is where all these men were hung, and they sort of achieved kind of a partial immortality. These guys have been running around for the last 150 years. But there are drawbacks. They have to return to the tree every night, and there's a kind of a cave or a cavern or a chamber underneath the tree where they have to retreat, and they, in the embrace of the roots, they decay and are reborn again each morning. So they can't go very far from the tree. They're not very glamorous, glittery, undead, sparkly vampires or anything like that. They just sort of... yeah, I know. It's not very romantic. Mm-hmm. But they're very much tied to the land, and I think there are a lot of archetypes that are like that. And these folks have been sort of inherited with this land that belongs to a ruthless cattle baron. And this is, they've been kind of passed down through the generations. So Petra has run afoul of these guys, who are, interestingly enough, in the tarot, symbolized by the Hanged Man card. And the Hanged Man card is one of my favorites because it represents life in suspension and looking at things from a different perspective. The Hanged Men can entirely do this because one of the perks of being a Hanged Man is that they can split their consciousness off into one or many ravens to kind of do reconnaissance. So they do. Yeah, they do get to literally see things from a different perspective. But they're very vulnerable to things. And, it's kind of fun as far as superpowers go. But you better hope that nobody's walking around with a shotgun with some bird shot, or else, you know, you're having a really bad day. So... yeah, so I pick up cards like the Hermit, the Hanged Man, things like that, I'm thinking about the story, about what this could mean, because archetypes are how we connect to stories at a larger level. We all have these archetypes way back in our mind. You know, we all recognize Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars as the wizard or the hermit in the tarot. We recognize these characters instinctually, and It's good to have that shorthand in a story, because we all recognize them on a subconscious level, and then I don't have to go into quite as much detail about, oh yes, this guy's the wizard because I can get into the story and we can get into the meat of things without having to belabor points that we already know on an emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, that is the interesting thing about archetypes. And did you use the tarot cards to decide these were men who'd been hung?
I had been kind of playing around with that idea for a while, but yeah. I was like, there's a leader for them, and I was trying to do a character profile using the cards for Gabriel, who is kind of the oldest and the wisest of the group. And that's what I came up with for him. Because I wanted to do kind of an undead character, but I didn't want to I didn't want to do a vampire, and I didn't want to do, things that had been seen a lot before. I wanted to come up with something that would be a little bit different. And, yeah, that was the key for me, was just seeing that card and knowing, okay, these are the Hanged.
Yeah. Okay, so that's... okay, so you did kind of get that from although you kind of were going that direction anyway.
Yeah, and it's always kind of nice. I feel like I'm going the right direction when I pick up the cards and I get that confirmation that, yeah, this is where you should be going.
Right. Well, this is a fascinating subject, and I'd love to have you do a webinar on it sometime using archetypes in your writing.
I will have to see if I have enough material for that. It's kind of one of those things that I use in practice. And there have been a lot of really great books that have been written about using tarot in writing. I think that's actually the title of one of them, of one of the books, Tarot in Writing. But, yeah, there's a lot of good resources out there for that. But it's just it's fun to just be able to kind of connect whatever's going on in your imagination with the cards, because you can just put the spread out there, and if you like it, you can say, oh, well, that's where I'm going, and take some notes and go from there. And even if you get a spread that you don't like or that you don't really understand, you can always take notes and come back to it later, and then maybe sometimes it'll make sense. And I often plot out not just profiles or the characters, strengths and weaknesses and those kinds of things with the cards. I often plot out the arc. If I'm thinking about what's the major conflict, I'll draw some cards for that. Or, you know, hey, I'm at the gushy middle of Act 2. What can I do to spice things up here a little bit? Because we all hate the soft, gushy middle of Act 2. And you got to set something on fire or blow something up in the soft, gushy middle of Act 2. And, you know, sometimes you need a push to make sure that that happens.
Okay. Go ahead if you have more. Otherwise, I was going to ask you to start read something from your books, because I love the way you write.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It's nice to have some positive reinforcement, because writing is just, as you know, is just such a lonely thing. You're in a room and you're doing the writing and you have no idea whether it's any good or not. Until it's actually out there.
Yes. And then it's too late to take it back.
Right. So I'm going to read a little bit of an excerpt from my newest book in the Dark Alchemy series. The book is called Mercury Retrograde. And I'm going to read a little bit from the back first so folks have a little bit of background about what the book is about. Something venomous has come to Temperance. It's been 2 months since Petra D and her coyote sidekick, Sig, faced off against Temperance's resident alchemist, but things are far from quiet. When an internet video of a massive snake in the backcountry of Yellowstone goes viral, a chase for the mythical basilisk is on. Monster hunters swarm into the area, and never one to pass up the promise of discovery, Petra joins in the search. Among the newcomers is a snake cult on wheels, the Biker Gang, Sisters of Serpents. Unlike some, the sisters don't want to kill the basilisk. They want to worship it. But things get complicated when the basilisk develops a taste for human flesh that rivals the sisters' own murderous skills. Meanwhile, the alchemical tree of life is dying, and the undead hanged men of Temperance, who depend on it, know the basilisk may be their last chance for survival. With time running out for everyone around her, Petra will be forced to decide who survives and who she must leave behind in this action-packed sequel to Dark Alchemy. So I'm going to read the end of Chapter 1, and just to set the scene up, Petra and some of her friends have come across the bodies of some campers in the woods. And the full excerpt is actually on Julia's website on Talk Story Media. But I'm just going to go ahead and read the end of this chapter. Petra has had the sense that she is being watched, and she looks up and she sees a raven in the trees and is beginning to wonder if maybe this is not just an ordinary raven. Clear now. The raven pumped his wings, pulling himself into the blue sky as far as he could get from the smell of blood in the compass and the aura of poison clinging to the campsite. He caught an updraft from the sun-warmed land, skimming along the south edge of the mountains, over the dark ribbons of road and the dry grasses of autumn fields. The draft required little effort from him. He stretched his wings and allowed his eyes to drift shut. The sun felt gloriously warm on his back, seeping through his feathers into his light body. In the sky, things were simple. There was no magic that could touch him here. No blood, no pain. There was just sun and air and sky. He sailed along the current until it weakened. He twitched his feathers, gave in to the instinct to flap his wings and opened his eyes to look down. A vast field spread below him, gold and grassy and glinting with dew. A massive elm tree stood at its center, and below its shade stood a man in a white hat. The raven made a slow spiral, relishing the last bit of air through his feathers. He skimmed around the tree in a lazy arc, approaching the motionless man on the ground. The man opened his arms as if inviting a lover back. His amber eyes glowed brighter than dawn. The bird slammed into his chest. Feathers melded with flesh, fluttering into a pulse and soaking into skin. Gabriel let his hands fall. The bird twitched through his consciousness as he absorbed all it had seen. Above him, leaves rustled. Some were living leaves, some dead. The tree stood, scarred and ancient, but its shadow had grown thin. He reached up to pluck a brown leaf from a branch of the hangman's tree. This wasn't the only withered branch. The tree's leaves had begun to curl at the center, as if autumn's breath had come weeks earlier. He turned the leaf over in his hands. The tree was dying. He felt it even before the leaves had begun to drop, as the magic in it faltered. Even the Lunaria, the alchemical tree of life, couldn't survive forever, not after what it had been put through, creating generations of undead to haunt the Rutherford Ranch. Not after what he had been put through. If he closed his eyes, he could still remember bleeding into the roots of the Lunaria and the tree's frantic efforts to put him back together. He'd been torn to pieces in the explosion of a collapsing house. Wood had pierced and rent his body to bits. It would have been best to leave him to dust. But no, the other hanged men had brought him back here, out of sheer instinct. And the last raven had been brought back to him, that last fragment of himself. Through excruciating pain and light, he'd been revived, though not wholly. He was conscious of vast gaps in his memory, as if time had eaten away at an old tintype photograph. He'd forgotten his middle name. He couldn't remember the exact year he'd come here, though he knew it had happened over a century ago. He recalled bits and pieces of alchemy, arcane bits of ephemera about dissolution and phoenixes. His right hand shook when he wasn't concentrating on it, and he developed a somewhat mechanical twitch in his left eye. An irritating limp came and went, even if he parsed his feet away as ravens and brought them back again. Revived, but at a terrible cost. The light running through the veins of the tree grew more sluggish with each sunrise. He could feel it choked off, as if some force had girdled it beyond retrieval. The end of the tree would be the end of all the hanged men. He remembered that much. Behind closed eyes, he thought about that possibility of oblivion. Nothingness was seductive. No more striving to see another day. Just dust. He'd had a taste of it when he'd lain in pieces within the Lunaria's embrace. He crumbled the brittle leaf in his fist and opened his eyes. His gaze traveled to the south fence, where the rest of the hanged men toiled, herding the cattle to the north pasture. This wasn't just about him. There were the others to think of. The others, who had no voice, who had simply ceased to exist along with him if the tree died. He could choose to give up, but the decision was not his alone. And yet, perhaps he had seen a solution. The part of his consciousness he'd sent out as a bird had detected something strange, something that might save the last thing he held dear. So that is the end of chapter one for this book, and it was a lot of fun to write because I had wanted to deal with the idea of the basilisk. The basilisk is kind of an interesting figure in alchemy because it represents a lot of kind of fearsome things and a lot of things that are also healing in their way, oddly enough. I'd been fascinated by basilisks for a long time. They recur a lot in alchemy, and I worked with the idea of its deadly venom. And the basilisk in the story is supposed to be descended from the blood of Medusa, and the blood of the basilisk can grant eternal life. So it is a hugely magical creature. So part of the premise of the book was me wondering what would happen if a basilisk woke up in Yellowstone Park and what the motivations of a creature like that might be. So once it's woken up and it's, you know, it's not exactly on a rampage, but whenever it kind of crosses the path of humans, bad things tend to happen. But everybody wants it, whether they are monster hunters who are curious to get a photograph of the creature, or whether it's the hanged men who want its blood to restore their tree. It's definitely a wanted creature, and it's a creature that I feel a great deal of sympathy for in the story.
Uh-huh. Wow. I can't wait to read the whole book. And tell us where we can buy that book, Laura.
Well, it just came out in paperback yesterday. It's available at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon.com, Books A Million, Powell's, etc. And it's also available as an e-book. The title is Mercury Retrograde by me, Laura Bickel, and the publisher is Harper Voyager Impulse.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And we're hoping to see some of your stories on Talk Story Media in the future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay. We'll see you soon.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.